You've tuned in to Soundcast Stereo. I'm Christopher Coleman. I'm on Channel 1, and I love to sing about the Muna and the Juna and the Springer. I love to sing.
And I'm Kristen Romanelli, Managing Editor of Film Score Monthly online. I'm on Channel 2, and I'm an alto, so don't pay attention to me.
Soundcast Stereo episodes are two channel 30-minute-ish conversations focused on a single topic from the world of film, television, or video game soundtracks. You can find almost all of our episodes of the Soundcast on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and or on Acast. But if you want to find all episodes, you're going to need to go to tracksounds.com and find our feed for the podcast. If you want to give us feedback, you can do so by email at soundcast@tracksounds.com. If you want to give us feedback via your voice, you can use our SpeakPipe widget. If you want to do so on Twitter, you can do so at tracksounds. Not three ats, just one at tracksounds, or find us on Facebook.
Today is Thursday, March 23rd, 2017, and this is episode 18, where Chris and I discuss the question, do songs plus score soundtracks still work today?
This all began a week or so ago when I went to see Kong Skull Island. Have you seen Kong Skull Island yet?
I have not.
You have not. Okay, well, I'm going to tell you some things that won't spoil anything, really. It'll just be a help to you.
Okay.
And to everyone who's listening, basically. And I just want to share kind of where this idea of talking about or this question germinated from. When I see Skull Island, the first half, I'd say, of the first act is nothing but era-specific songs from the Vietnam era, or just right at the end of the Vietnam era, so early 70s. And just about every character introduced gets their own little 70s rock or folk song. And it was like having a bad appetizer setting up the rest of the meal, but didn't matter how good the food was, after that appetizer, all I could taste was the appetizer.
Mm-hmm.
And it really kind of didn't ruin the entire movie, but it set it off in a bad way and kind of it diminished the rest of the movie. The movie itself had plenty of other things to ruin itself for me. And so it got me to thinking about this somewhat resurgent trend, at least since 2014, or was it 15? I can't remember when Guardians came out. But
14.
Where the big budget blockbusters just want to have these very specific, very nostalgic pop songs included on the soundtrack. And so it begged the question, do these songs plus scores in these soundtracks still work today? And that's the question we're going to examine. But to start, maybe we should talk about some songs or songs and or scores from the same movie that actually work together. Well, do you have one that you just love?
Well, that Guardians of the Galaxy example is absolutely perfect, I think. I have listened to that countless times. I could go into my iTunes and look, but it'd probably be embarrassing.
Oh, it keeps track of that, doesn't it?
It does.
Okay.
And I noticed while researching for this that Awesome Mixtape Volume 1 is still on iTunes Top 10 for soundtrack albums. 3 years after the fact.
And it's still number one on Amazon in terms of soundtracks. If it lists them in order of sales, it's right smack dab at the top.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is definitely where this resurgence has come from, I believe. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you believe.
And producers of these movies clearly believe they must also use iTunes and Amazon and
Ka-ching.
Say, wow, it's still at the top.
Yeah.
Maybe we ought to get a piece of that action.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate because I think they misjudge why those songs were so effective in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Right.
and it's not just, oh, nostalgic songs, let's put them in because we can. There's much more to it, especially when it comes to that movie, Guardians of the Galaxy. Mm-hmm. And they definitely missed it on Kong Skull Island. Just completely missed it. Is there another that you love?
When I first started thinking about this question, I started thinking about, you know, Prince's Purple Rain, since, you know, his music is so... it's the entire thing.
Right.
So then I figured we kind of have to eliminate that and musicals in general.
It's a little unfair.
Because, right. Also something like Breakfast at Tiffany's, where like Moon River is so much a part of Mancini's score. It's kind of a different animal. So I'm not going to approach those.
Yeah, it would, maybe that's a whole other discussion, because there, you know, they get to incorporate the motifs from the songs into mm-hmm. the score, and it, you know, it just has a nice custom feel and a much more unified feel.
Right.
Whereas these others don't necessarily have that luxury. But one that doesn't have that luxury, but yet still works so well together, to me, I would say, is the definitive example of songs plus score working together to help form the personality and tone of a film, and that is 1999's The Matrix.
Yes, absolutely.
Which is, as we were talking about last week, Eric Woods and I, about The Matrix so much, you know, it came up that, hey, both of those parts of The Matrix music are equally important, especially for the first one. And then, you know, the songs kind of diminish, go away as we get to the Reloaded, and then are gone by the time we get to Revolutions. Mm-hmm. And I understand narratively why that is, but I think that's partly why, you know, the audience's responses to those films, maybe not as high. They might not pin it on that. They might say it's just, oh, it's stupid. What are they doing? I don't understand what's happening. But the departure from the coolness that is The Matrix, and you leave those songs behind. You don't mm-hmm. have the wonder of this world and the whole idea of, you know, you're not in the real world, you're in this Matrix, which, and just facilitated having those super cool songs, electronica songs in there, melding or balancing Don Davis's very powerful, evocative score on the whole other side of the spectrum. To me, it's the best combination of songs and score ever.
Mm.
And I say that pretty confidently, at least for me personally.
Yeah, those songs, they tie into a tone, they tie into an era, and mm-hmm. into a subculture that the whole movie was really about. And even if you listen to the music of like Rob D., now mm-hmm. you're brought right back to that. Even if it's not the music he had in The Matrix, even if it's Furious Angels or something, it is mm-hmm. that tone that brings you to that Matrix time.
Yeah, it's true. And I remember first time I saw that movie, I was like, I must have the score album and the soundtrack album. I got to have them both, which, you know, I think it's like a 30-minute album or something mm-hmm. from Verez Sarabhan, very short. Obviously, they've gone on to release extendeds, which is great. But in that case, I had to have both CDs, and I had to rip both CDs on my super slow, whatever it was, 5X CD, CDR, into MP3, so I could make my own custom playlist, so I could experience exactly the way it should be experienced. And it was interspersing songs and score tracks, and it's just the quintessential combination for me.
I was much less elegant and recorded them onto tape, so I could have it in my terrible old Volvo driving around.
Nice. Was it on a metal tape at least?
No.
Oh, wow. Just a normal bias TDK 60 minute tape.
Yep.
You still have it?
I actually might. I found a whole pile of tapes while I was digging through some, through a whole bunch of like DVDs. I had a stash of tapes like hidden behind nice. There. but I didn't go through them all completely. Yeah.
I would so give anything for the tapes I had in the 80s. I would give anything to have those back right now, but long gone. Is there another film that offers an interesting or a good combination of songs and score?
Well, recently I really liked Edge of 17, which, you know, Atle Iverson had kind of a light upbeat score, which I know.
Surprise. Very different for him.
Peppy Iceland.
They are known for the pep.
But they also had pop music. And I'm not at all familiar with what the kids are listening to. But I really enjoyed it. It was really upbeat. It really worked for the spirit of the film. And it didn't work against it.
So it's all contemporary songs?
Yeah.
No, like, throwback stuff, retro in any way?
I think so. But... Mm.
Now, that's with Haley Streitenfeld, right?
Yes.
I didn't see the film.
Yes.
I heard good things about it. I mean, it was supposed to be very, very, very good.
It is very good. Yeah.
And the score and the songs work well together?
Together.
Hmm.
Yes. Another example, I think, where the songs and the score don't quite work together, but they juxtapose each other. Is The Martian, which is Disco on Mars. So you have Harry Gregson-Williams, you know, kind of sci-fi sweepy score. But then you have this disco music, which is the only music Matt Damon's character has on the planet, because Jessica Chastain's character apparently really liked it. And...
See, I don't recall any disco in that movie.
That's a shame.
I mean, I don't recall a lot about the movie. Not that I didn't like it. It was just so different in tone than I was expecting that somehow... And that must have disappointed me on some level because I haven't returned to see it again, or I don't remember what the score sounded like. Although I can imagine, you know, I can kind of fill it in with Harry Gregson-Williams stuff. But
and ABBA.
And who?
And ABBA.
And ABBA. Well, and he doesn't sing or dance with any of the music?
No.
On the planet of Mars by himself?
Well, there is... I think when he's in the rover, he starts singing along to it, like, after he's been there a long, long time.
Oh, okay. Just he's, like, losing it.
Yeah.
Okay. He probably loves... Did he come to love it by the end?
No.
Oh, he doesn't. He hates it.
He takes every opportunity to make fun of Jessica Chastain's character because of the disco.
Okay. And so it works because it's so different.
Because it's different and it's a different tone than what you would expect from a scientist being trapped on Mars.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
And it's consistent. I mean, it's not... You know, like a random choosing of songs that a producer thought, well, people like this song, and this song, and they'll buy them. It's not like a calculated effort to make some money. It's
he picked songs that he thought the character of Jessica Chastain would like as a person who liked retro 70s stuff.
Right. The music is consistent to... the story.
Okay. And that's good. I'm all for that. If it's character based, it makes sense. I mean, character based and not in trying to doesn't try to define who she is as a character, does it?
No.
It just reflects portions of her character, I assume.
No, it's just the music she likes.
Okay, that's all it is. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's fair. I need to rewatch that film. The last one I have in terms of ones that have done it really well is Forrest Gump from 1995. Has to be 95. I think it's 95. Where you do have a lot of the same era kind of music that was used also in Kong Skull Island from early 70s, you know, Vietnam era. Creedence Clearwater Revival, other, you know, folk songs from the mid to late 70s, very similar stuff, but was much more effective, maybe because of that was 20 years ago and there were fewer amount of movies that used those songs to represent that era. But it was, to me, it was just a very good a fit for that particular film. Mm-hmm. And then you have Alan Silvestri's score, which I think is truly one of his best. You know, it's not one that I listen to all the time, but every time I go back to it, it moves me. Like, I can't remember the little girl's, or it was Jenny, but when she's, her theme brings me to tears every time I hear it. It just breaks me. But so you have that really, the wondrous side and kind of the innocent side represented by a Silvestri score. And then you have just the context, you know, of the eras of Gump's life represented in the songs. And I think it works very well together. While you get the true emotional content out of Silvestri, you get the context from the songs. And I think that combination works very well together.
Absolutely.
Do you like Forrest Gump? I mean, there's a lot of people who don't now for whatever reason. They're like, Forrest Gump, so stupid. Why did it win Best Picture? I don't know where that comes from. People just all of a sudden hate on it. But which camp are you in?
I do like Forrest Gump. And if David hears this, he's going to, like, my husband, he's just going to shake his head at me. And
oh, he's one of the haters, huh?
He's one of the haters.
What? I don't know what they hate about it. He
hates it on a disability studies point of view. Oh. It's a very academic hatred.
Okay. As in not unfair or bad representation or something?
Yeah, I think
or it's... Or exploitation?
I think it's poor representation or something.
Okay. I guess I can hear. I've not heard that reasoning before. I hear other whiny kind of things that because I forgot what it beat that year. It beat some other film. I can't remember what it was up against. And that's usually what I hear. It's like, how could that possibly win over whatever the other nominee was? But I think it's a very good use of songs and score. Well, why don't we move on to some examples that may be not so good in the recent past. I've already mentioned Kong Skull Island. Mm-hmm. I'll just say it out there again. I think it was just very lazy on the nose. Just like, hey, it's the 70s, so you know. We'll give you five songs right off the bat that tell you it's the 70s. Mm-hmm. And it was just lazy and distracting. And I could say that about a lot of different elements of that film. So it was consistent, because they were lazy and distracting in a lot of ways. So that'll be my first one that I throw out there is not a great example. And I like Henry Jackman's score well enough. It was actually a little more melodic than I was expecting with the brass and all of that. Couldn't hear it very well in the film, but as a standalone listen, I like it a lot more. What about you? Do you have one or two that not so great?
Well, the first thing that pops into my head is definitely Watchmen. And I know that the songs that are chosen were cued in the comic. Alan Moore wrote in the comic which songs go to which scenes. So,
really?
Yep. Bob Dylan's Times Are Changing, that is in the right place. It's in the comic. 99 Luftballoons, wow. It's in the comic. And horribly, painfully, Hallelujah by Leonard Cohen.
That he wrote that song for that scene?
He Alan Moore put it in the comic that that was playing in that scene. And I don't know whether to blame him or to blame Zack Snyder's shitty execution, but that was the most awkward.
It was off. I had no idea Alan Moore did that, number one.
Yeah.
I thought that was all Zack. Wow.
No, that was partially Alan Moore's fault. Partially, apparently, a complete lack of chemistry between Patrick Wilson and Malik Ackerman, which they're really attractive people. I don't see why that should be a problem.
It should have been a big acting job.
Apparently, it is. That was just so horrible and painful and unsexy. It did not ruin the song for me, but dear Lord.
They gave it a good shot. Now I have, because I haven't seen two of the next I'm going to bring up yet. I don't know if I ever will, to be honest, but I've heard, especially about one, I've heard very negative things about the songs included, similar to the things I've said about Kong Skull Island. And that first one is Suicide Squad. I understand the beginning of that has kind of like a little vignette showing each kind of character, and each character gets a song, and it's supposedly very on the nose. And it felt, from what the people said, that they were just straight up going for the Guardians of the Galaxy thing and just wanting to get in a bunch of good songs, quote unquote good songs from a very specific era that will sell the soundtrack. Have you seen Suicide Squad?
I have, and I agree on that, to the point where they use Spirit in the Sky, which is included in the Guardians of the Galaxy soundtrack, but it was cut from the film. On another note,
I thought it was used when he flies away from that first planet.
No.
Oh, no, that's something different. I can't remember the name of that song, but it's not Spirit in the Sky.
No, it's not. Okay. That was cut from the film.
It was in the trailer, though, wasn't it? Wasn't it one of the trailers?
It might have been. It's still on the Awesome sound, on the Awesome mix.
Okay.
It's also,
maybe that's why I keep thinking about it.
Spoiler alert, used in Life, which was the point where I was just like, can we stop using this song?
In the trailer or in the movie?
In the movie.
Oh, gosh. Someone on the space station's playing it?
No, I shouldn't say in the movie. It's over the end credits, which is even stupider.
Okay.
I like the song all right, and I was delighted to find it on the Awesome mix, but we just need
it's
to stop using it for now.
It's one of those
that
you can't use anymore. Yeah. I agree with you. Like Clearance, you just can't use that anymore for your 70s era film. Or reference. You just can't. It's a great song. You can't use it anymore. Sorry.
Yep.
It's out of consideration. Okay. The other one I was going to mention was Deadpool, which I very much enjoy that score. I know I'm one of the few who will say positive things about Junkie XL's score. I love the creativity he has in that score. I haven't seen the film, but I just listened to the music. I love the 80s references in it. Since I haven't seen the film, I don't know how effective or not effective the songs are with it, but I've heard not so positive things about it.
I disagree.
Okay.
I love the use of the songs in Deadpool. Oh, probably more than, are we calling him Junkie XL or Tom Holkenborg?
Tom Holkenborg, whichever
because
one comes
I
to my
think,
mind first.
I think he's going by that now.
Okay. Junkie XL is the shorthand. It comes out faster than Tom. What was it? Holkenborg? Yeah.
Holkenborg.
So just Junkie XL just slides right out.
All right. I loved the songs. Angel of the Morning. Shoop. It's classic. And the use of Careless Whisper. Oh, my God. You have to see it in context. You have to hear it in context. It's.
Now,
I don't think
it
was a cash
grab. Diegetic
or
non-diegetic? Or is it both?
Both.
Sometimes, one or the other.
Both.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think part of it is a cash grab, but I think it's a cash grab that actually works.
Okay. I can get up with that. Given the care and given the care that the writers, the directors, producers all put into that film, it doesn't surprise me that their choices of music are not just soundtrack cash grabs. Mm-hmm. But they were really trying to tell the story and underscore, especially his character. I assume that Deadpool's character, I assume a lot of those songs are attached to things that he is doing, maybe. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing. So that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, I mean, Angel of the Morning wouldn't be a cash grab song anyway.
So. That's true. That's true. Well, there might be some out there. Who's Angel in the Morning
Angel
by? That's by
of the morning.
Yeah, what is that woman's name? Juice Newton or so? Isn't that who did that song?
I don't even know. Now it's Deadpool to me. It's all Deadpool to me.
It's all Deadpool to me. That's a really good title. okay. Do you have some others that didn't work for you so well?
Well, every David O. Russell film, maybe not everyone, but I feel like he doesn't actually care about how music works in his film. Like, he has an idea of what he wants to use only because it's cool. And not for a particular reason. That's how I feel about David O. Russell.
Okay. other than Silver Linings Playbook, I haven't really enjoyed his films. I enjoyed Silver Linings. Now, American Hustle I was looking at the Amazon soundtracks page. It's pretty high up. I'd say it's in the top 20, which is pretty amazing. That special deluxe edition of Guardians is like, I don't know, in the top 10. So you've got the regular Awesome Mix Volume 1 as number 1, and then that deluxe edition is like, it's somewhere below it, but in the top 10 as well. So, they did really well with their soundtrack, for that film. And American Hustle apparently has touched somebody somewhere because it's selling, was that 2 years old as well? And it continues to sell. I've taken offense, and I've mentioned it many times, about, even though there's only two tracks in Space Action Beyond, I found them, especially the second, extremely offensive and distracting. I don't think it was a cash grab at all. I think they were trying to tell a story with it. I mean, it actually became the secret weapon, which is just the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen in my life. And I almost got up and left, but I didn't. And I thought, you know what? I'm pretty much done with Space Action until they do something completely different with it. But then it was for sale, or it was for rent, for 99 cents on Vudu. So a few weeks ago, I said, let me give it another try. And nope. I guess I liked it more because I knew what was coming. But the Public Enemy, it was just like, no. I'm sorry. You can't use a song as a weapon. It's like Star Trek used a rap song as a weapon.
Yeah.
that sentence should not exist.
Yeah. Well,
it just can't exist.
As much as I love the Beastie Boys,
Was it Beastie Boys in this the one that they use? I thought it was Public Enemy.
No.
It was Public Enemy.
No, it was Beastie Boys.
Oh, the first song they played was Public Enemy then. I'm almost certain of it. One of them was Public Enemy.
They used Sabotage by the Beastie Boys, which called back.
Both times?
They called back to the first Star Trek movie.
He was listening to it. But I thought the girl, the alien girl, was playing. She had
maybe she was
music.
The weapon.
But I thought it was
the weapon was Beastie Boys, though.
Okay. Either way, you can't say that statement that Captain Kirk used the Beastie Boys song as a weapon. Just you can't do that.
I feel like that was the least of the problems with this movie.
Oh, no. No. That was the biggest problem.
He jumped through a view screen.
Fine. I'll take it. I'll take that. I can't take...
They flew a starship without a deflector shield.
I'll take it.
A piece of dust would destroy it.
Music into space. You can't do it. There's nothing for it. It's silent in space. I mean, it was so offensive to me that I was like, are you serious right now? You're blasting it. You're blasting... Even if it was just a... alarm sound. Let's just crank the alarm up and cause, even if it was that would have been offensive. But that they try to pull it off with a Beastie Boys song, it was absolutely the most absurd thing I've seen. I mean, I was beside myself with that. I was moving around in my chair like, should I leave now? Because they clearly think I'm a freaking idiot.
I did have an angry rant in a bar after watching that movie. So.
Anyway, that inclusion of that song I felt was horrible and doesn't... I mean, it's not on the soundtrack, which is great. Giacchino's work is fine. There's a number of tracks I really love on that. But having that song in there was just... it's the worst. Just the worst. And it makes me think of all the other horrible things in that movie. So... that's my rant on Space Action Beyond. Do you have something that you would like to rant about that's musically based before we wrap up?
Well, I also included Wolf of Wall Street in my list.
Okay.
I don't feel as intensely about that as you do about Star Trek, but Wolf of Wall Street. AKA Theodore Shapiro gets buried by a random mixtape avalanche. There's basically no score in this movie, so I can't say whether it would work with the songs or not.
He's a great composer.
He is a great composer. I feel like a lot of these songs are random, except for the wonderful, amazing use of Umberto Tozzi's Gloria, which is great in any context.
True. It makes everything better.
It does.
Okay.
That one I haven't banned from being used in movies yet.
Okay. Not yet. Okay. Well, as we wrap it up here, What's your prediction for the future of these blockbuster soundtracks? Do you think we're going to continue to get these combos and especially the retro stuff that they try to pull in, or do you think it's kind of run its course and it'll take a rest for a while? What do you think is coming in the future?
Well, you know, 10 years ago we thought that these pulse-based non-melodic scores had run their course, and look where we are now. So I don't think it has actually run its course as far as money goes, and as far as producers in the studios goes. I mean, I thought we had gotten rid of songs inspired by albums, and one's come out for songs inspired by Ghost in the Shell. So
yes.
We are right back in that direction.
All right. So I think that's going to wrap up this episode of Soundcast Stereo. We'd like to encourage you to share with us your feedback on any part of this episode or any past episodes as well. But let us know what you think about the song plus score soundtracks for big blockbuster films. Is that still working for you? Are you tired of it? What makes a good mixture of those two things for you on any given soundtrack? Please let us know, and you can do so at soundcast@trackzones.com. Send us an email there. Leave us a voicemail on our SpeakPipe widget. Hit us up on Twitter at TrackSounds or on Facebook. If you want to follow me personally for some reason, you can do so at C. Coleman. And Kristen Romanelli, how can people get a hold of you?
The best way to find me is on Twitter at KB4FOR now. And also Film Score Monthly online, fsmonline.com. We just put out a new issue, so go check that out.
Is Logan in there?
Yes, it is.
Is Kong in there?
Yes, it is.
Is Space Action Beyond in there?
I don't think Michael Cicchino talks to us anymore.
Oh, that's that. You have to tell me more about that later.
That's just me being bitter. He might. He's a very busy man.
He's a busy guy.
He's a very busy, very nice man.
He scores Star Wars movies in his vacation time. So that's a busy guy.
I don't think he actually has vacation time.
Apparently not. Well, it has been a couple months since I've heard his name attached to anything. So that's something. Check out the latest edition of Film Score Monthly if you want to get some insight into Kong Skull Island and Logan, and a lot more, I'm sure.
We have Get Out on the cover.
Oh, okay. Yep. Nice. That's going to do it for this episode. Thank you all for listening. And until our next episode, we want to tell you to...
Hey!